The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
There we go. We're ready to go. I got a phone caller right away. Let me just do a couple of these things. Oh, hello? Man, I can hear myself good.
Hello.
Phone caller, are you there?
Yeah,
aloha.
Hello?
Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can bear
it. Mr. Phone caller.
Can you hear me? Hello?
Oui. Full color. Talk to him.
Hear me?
Come on, man. You can't hear nobody.
Are you still there?
Yeah. Okay, so that was a rough start. We'll get that phone caller back on up. I'm not sure exactly what I did. Oh, how's that? Sounds different. I'm glad Dean's here this afternoon because he's always good at pushing the right buttons. Yeah, still trying to get him.
That's a trip. Yeah, okay. Well, thanks for calling back.
We'll try. Here we go.
Again, okay?
Hey, far away, Tim. Right now, I hear somebody. Are you there?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
That's good. Not barely. You're a little low, but it's great. I have a question about these private security guards at Donkey Beach and Secret Beach that are hired by these rich people. They go down and patrol the beaches and intimidate people or tell them they have to put on clothes or tell them they have to quit smoking ganja or not to play their music.
But are they the morality police? Is that who you're saying? Is that the morality police?
No, they're security people hired by rich people that live adjacent to the beaches.
Oh, okay. So any specific rich people or just generic rich people?
What?
I said, are they specific rich people or generic rich people?
People who live above Secret Beach, who send their security guard down to tell people to put on their clothes and such. I don't know how you can hire people, rich people can hire private people to then secure public beaches that just happen to be adjacent to their house like it's their own beach.
Right. Now,
and they're doing it at Donkey's Beach, too. You see those guys every day, and they walk up to Kailea.
I think there's a number of beaches where there's that type of vibe, if you will.
Yeah, but that's not good. That's like infringing on your rights. And these people can
intimidate,
and maybe they have friends on the police, and maybe they can get away with it because they have power. But it's not right. And I just wanted to see if people know how this is being done or if people are aware it's being done or if you're worried that maybe rich people are stealing away your right and are, trying to intimidate you and taking over public beaches. So I just wanted to throw that out there. It seems to be not a good situation.
No, I would agree it's not a good situation. And I appreciate you bringing that up. You're not the only one that's brought that up as a concern. I think Tim has something he wanted to share.
Well, I was just once again, thanks for calling in your concern and everything. At the same time, do you have any viable solutions, or have you approached anyone, towards this, as a complaint, as a concerned citizen that lives here and that your rights are being violated? Have you taken it to anyone yet?
Okay, I can't hear you. I'm going to hang up.
Oh,
here we go.
Oh, well.
I guess
it's all
the end of that conversation. The caller raises some, I think, mutually shared concerns. Your question of, what's some solutions to that? I mean, we could look to our local government to help out. Maybe they would have
an answer. We could defer it.
We could defer it until it comes up again.
Yeah.
Well, Tim, you asked me a question on the way up. I'm like, what did you think about the mayor's? And I'm looking at the headlines of the Garden Island News and to defer or not to defer, And what's the bigger story, if you will? Is it the mayor and the administration asking for the deferral or the, if you will, perceived unpreparedness by the mayor to act? And I did see a comment in regards to the mayor's campaign slogan. I think it's action with aloha. So I'm not going to be here to defend the mayor. He can do that on his own or have some of his administrative staff do that. And I think also worth noting is the recent response to the backlash, if you will, or the fact that there's been some pushback to the call for deferral. Why there is resistance or hesitancy to accept that as being viable, yet for all intent and purposes, 2 months? How long is that? 60 days?
60 days,
right?
And counting. 59 now.
There is so much... so much that can happen in that time. Do we just stop? Is that what the deferral means? Is that we don't carry on? We don't continue to do work? Or I'm not quite sure I understand it. But hopefully we'll get some more on that. I do have Councilmember Gary Hooser penciled in to give us a shout. So we'll try to get Gary on the line here soon. Also coming into the booth is Dee Morikawa from Representative Dee Morikawa from
the west side
from Waimea-Kekaha, that side. She's kind enough to drive out here and hang out with us in the air-conditioned booth, so looking forward to that. I want to just take a pause from the show, if you will, to get a phone call coming. 826-7771, if you would like to bring up a subject that's near and dear to you. I did want to find out a little bit about Jonathan Jay's got a petition. He is looking to have folks consider. I think it has something to do with the KIUC's decision to remove your smart meter for a fee, or to charge you to read your non-smart meter meter reading fee. I'm not sure exactly what it is, so I've got a little bit of homework to do there. I like the mayor, haven't done my homework in regards to some current issues going around. But you know, here's somebody that has done her homework. So I'll share this with you over the airwaves. Mahalo's firm for all that you're doing.
Wildlife Management and Environmental Science, and I'm testifying today on behalf of myself, my family, and Ohana o Kauai, which I am a director. As you consider your final decision about the fate of Bill 2491, I ask you to also consider what you can and can't live with as a person, as a leader, and as a representative of the people. Some things we will not be able to clearly have scientific certainty about for some time. This is developing science, and as these issues can and have been deliberated on for decades. When dealing with uncertainty, it can be helpful to look at the different possibilities for the future, to compare them side by side, and to make a reasonable decision to act or not to act. Statisticians and decision makers often refer to a type 1 and a type 2 era to help you make that decision. I ask you today, what kind of era in worst case one is made can you live with? A type 1 era, a false positive, where you decide that there is a potential that there is a connection, a relationship, impacts from the biotech pesticide and GMO experimentation, that it deserves disclosure, investigation, buffers, and protection, that this is urgent and imminent, and you choose to act and now and pass Bill 2491. Say you're wrong. There were no impacts. The industry was well-regulated and safe. What's the worst that could happen? You're sued by the largest chemical corporations in the world over your right to know and buffer our children. The agricultural industry finally discloses and buffers its studies and controls. It's cost money for county oversight. Say worst case scenario, these companies leave overnight, not complying, but instead leaving 600 people without jobs that we would have to and can replace. Or a type 2 era, you decide not to take action because it's not your responsibility. If you're not certain, you won't be sued. You're not convinced of the scientific certainty behind the pesticide and GMO debate. So you choose not to pass the bill, but you turn out to be tragically wrong. What is the worst that can happen? Four of the largest chemical companies in the world continue to use an unknown and poorly regulated concoction of pesticides that amount to numbers that could be as high as 100 tons a year out in the open with little to no buffer zones or accountability. The poisoning of communities continues through pesticide drift. Crops unapproved for human consumption cross-pollinate and contaminate the food supply. Heart defects, birth defects, spontaneous miscarriages, non-Hodgkin lymphoma, asthma, and other diseases continue or maybe even rise. The biotech expansion grows on island, intimidating and threatening other communities and building social tension. Families go months, years, more, not knowing what the impacts are to their communities, their children, their home. These already known to be highly toxic pesticides are drifting from sites. They're impacting non-target animals and plants, ecosystems, collapsing coastal sites, and destroying our water supplies. The pesticide continues to impact honey supplies and bee health with no accountability at all. And the list goes on. These impacts have both monetary and priceless values, some things we may never have enough certainty about. But when we weigh these values out, and I encourage you to do so, and not just with the extremes, but with the moderate and the conservative possibilities, this is what your decisions today will come to, what resonates with you as Pono, and what can you live with. I leave you with a quote. The choice, after all, is ours to make. If having endured much, we have at least asserted our right to know, and if in knowing we have concluded that we are being asked to take senseless and frightening risks, then we should no longer accept the counsel of those who tell us that we must fill our world with poisonous chemicals. We should look to see what other courses are open to us. Rachel Carson, 1964. Mahalo.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Next.
Oh, there we go. Fern Nui Nui Rosenseal testifying in front of the council. I have council member Gary Hooser on the phone. Gary, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can, Jimmy. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us, taking time out of your schedule today. I did want to just ask questions in regards to the process, where we're at, what's next, what can we anticipate, and then also, you know, some sentiments in regards to the mayor's request for a deferral. What does a deferral mean? Is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Do we, you know, I think that there's been a fair amount of well, I don't want to say hostile response to his request to deferral, but it has ignited a number of us that say, God, that is just, if you will, outrageous and unacceptable. And we could start there, but I just wanted to inform listeners where are we at with the latest from Tuesday's council's proceedings.
Well, thank you, Jimmy. I think you kind of summarized a lot just now. I think part of the issue with the mayor weighing in on the whole matter is that he has not been engaged or active from the beginning, and so it's many people perceive that he's kind of coming late to the party and talking about this deferral, and so I also was caught off guard and I definitely do not support a deferral. You know, we've been working on this bill for months and months. There's been over 4,000 people testify on the bill. We've been people marching, people sleeping on the streets, you know, on the cement in front of the county building, people from both sides. And it's time for us as council members to do the rest of the work and vote and pass something. You know, we passed a modest version of the bill in committee, and that version contains some very important provisions. It's got a real strong like-to-know provision. And you know, the buffer zones need some work, so the bill needs some work.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe in a couple of hours at the next council meeting, we could work through those details and come up with a good bill and pass it into law and move forward on to the many other issues that are facing our community.
Well, there's certainly a number of issues facing our community, and yet this one seems to attract quite a bit of attention. We've now got the attention of the governor, and his administration is pledging to do more than they've ever done before. It sounds like the mayor wants to leverage whatever relationships that are there in the administration to get the state to be what, Gary? More responsive?
I think all this is really good stuff. If we pass 2491, and we have good disclosure, good buffer zones, and a good study put together, and then the state then fulfills its responsibility and hires more inspectors and funds the Department of Health and Department of Agriculture properly, that would be the best of all worlds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that way, you know, we have turned the attention of the state toward this important issue, not just for Kauai, but for the entire state.
Mm-hmm.
But too many people, I think, and I think the mayor is one of these people, are hoping that the state Department of Ag is somehow going to come in on a white horse and solve all these issues, and it's just not going to happen. The state is not going to enforce Kauai County laws. The state's not even enforcing their own laws.
Right.
But I think, you know, I think in general that we're on the right track. We pass a good 2491. We keep the pressure on the state. You know, we could really have moved a long way in the next few months. But we have to do the heavy lifting and pass the bill.
What do you think? I mean, you're obviously looking to get 4 votes on Tuesday, and it's done. Is that kind of the ideal? And what would be less than ideal but still acceptable? Is it that we would have to, again, wait for some new amendments or changes to the amendments, or is that already done?
You know, any amendments that need to be done could be done on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
I think any day additional where people have to sleep on the ground in front of the county building to participate in the process, it's too many. It's unacceptable. We've done enough work. We could spend as much time as we need to on Tuesday and we can finish it. It's a disservice to our community to stretch this thing out. And too often, deferrals are used as a way to get out from voting.
Mm-hmm.
And the scenario here could easily be, if it's deferred for 2 months, then all of a sudden people say, well, let's let the legislature, it starts in January, let's defer it to them. And then let's defer it to May until the legislature's over with.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're in the middle of an election year, and nobody wants to deal with it, and it gets deferred forever. I've seen it happen many, many times, and we cannot let that happen. That's a coward's way out for politicians.
Well, and but we know, Gary, that there's a number of cowards in the ranks, and you run against them, you run with them. You know, the fact of the matter is that our expectations for urgency and the reality of how government does things, where's the adjustment get made? Because I agree wholeheartedly with your statements that there's a lack of urgency from the administration on both sides. I mean, like, why now the governor is willing to say we're going to do something as soon as we get it together? Well, that it's echoed by the mayor.
I think the urgency, I mean, I obviously see it. Councilmember Bynum sees it. And a big part of the community sees it. And so I think at this point, it's up to the community to communicate that urgency one more time, not just to the mayor, but to the council members and to their friends and neighbors in the community, and that this is urgent, that there is harm happening because of the practices of this industry, and we need disclosure, and we need buffer zones, and we need to do a study. If we're wrong, then that's a good thing.
Right.
But if we're right, then it's a tragedy. We cannot afford to take this risk, and the council members need to understand that.
Yes, and I appreciate that, Gary. That I believe folks already suggest the tragedy is unfolding. We're witnessing to it. I'm in a very luxurious position to say, oh well, what's 2 months? It's 60 days. You know, we can do better in 60 days. Yet for somebody who has to endure more of it for 60 days. That's interminable. That is fully outrageous and unacceptable.
And, you know, Jimmy, we can do more in 60 days. We could pass the bill today, and if we wanted to make it stronger or weaker in 60 days, we could do that too.
Let's talk about that, Gary. What does that look like? What happens if we pass something but we recognize we would like either a change in these buffer zones or because there is community discussion in regards to the bill is weak. The bill has been watered down. And how do we strengthen it? How do we regain some of that, if you will, tooth to the matter?
And, you know, it happens every year in lawmaking, every day, if you would, where bills are amended, bills are changed, the laws are amended, laws are changed. And so if we pass this and then discover that it's too weak, you know, we put another bill forward and we amend it. If it's too strong, you know, we can do the same thing. But we have to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And we start with having the information. And it is just incomprehensible that we have to fight so hard just to find out what chemicals are being sprayed in our community. I mean, it is just incomprehensible that we have to do all this stuff just to find out.
Mm-hmm. Now, Gary, address the criticism that maybe the bill should have been, we should have done some of this vetting out of these issues previous to developing the bill. How do you respond to Jerry Ornelas' suggestion that we don't have to start a civil war to bring up these issues?
Yeah, I think the war started a long time ago, you know. 10 years ago, thereabouts, the people in Waimea Valley started fighting with Pioneer because Pioneer wouldn't cooperate, wouldn't help them with their problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this has been going on for a long time. They filed a lawsuit. You know, there's been marches before this bill came along. The companies have not. I have submitted in the state legislature at least a half a dozen bills dealing with pesticides and GMOs over the years. And these companies have fought them every step of the way. The Farm Bureau, who does a lot of good things in our community, have never, ever supported any increase in regulation at all of pesticides. None. The Department of Agriculture, the State Department of Agriculture, no state department has ever supported this. So it's been tried over the years. and we've gotten nowhere. This particular bill, you know, it was vetted in the community. It, you know, I talked to Jerry O'Nellis before I introduced the bill, and we introduced it. You know, I've dealt with these companies in the past, and it doesn't matter whether it's one component of this bill or five components, they're going to fight it to the end. You know, I tried to put a buffer zone on Waimea Canyon School, and they fought it all the way to the end, and it would never happen. You know, we've tried. It took D. Morikawa, Representative Morikawa, has been working on this bill since she got elected. And before that, Mina Morita, Representative Morita, worked on it. And it took 10 years, and it's very minimal what they got passed. Yeah, it's just the companies do not want anything at all to pass.
I guess that's a question I have, you know, in regards to why, you know, when you ask the question to the four representatives, Cindy Goldstein being one of them, Steve from BASF being another, I can't remember the other two, where they were at on these positions, on these sticking points, disclosure, buffer zones, that there was no participation, no acknowledgement, just
and
silence.
You know,
and then all of a sudden, the mayor or the governor steps in and now they're praising his name and saying, oh, yeah, we're more than willing to come to the table.
Right. They have said repeatedly, for example, there's nothing wrong with Roundup. There's nothing wrong with glyphosate. You know, it's harmless, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But when I ask them how much they're using, they refuse to tell them. And so that is the really worrisome thing is they are more than likely using far more than even we're guessing. Otherwise, I can't imagine why they're not telling us what they're using.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, I've been in this arena, lawmaking, policymaking for a long time, and I've seen these particular corporations in action before and other similar big companies. The playbook is always the same. They delay, they ask for a task force, they threaten you with their lawyers, and they try to confuse the issue. And they delay, and you run out of time. It's like running out the clock. And so that's what they're doing here.
And is that the scary thing about a deferral, is that it's just one tactic? Do we not give the mayor the benefit of the doubt and say, okay, we hear that you want to work with the state and that you want to try to get the resources, get it all together at the county level, whether it's the OED or it's going to be the public works, who's going to do this. Do we give the benefit of the doubt to the mayor that he's willing to work with the proponents of the bill, that he's willing to bring community to the table? Or do you think of it as just more of the same? And is there, Gary, is there political payback here that the administration is, you know, taking it a position that's counterproductive for your, if you will, sponsorship of this bill? And that there is, just because it's coming from you, who's been, if you will, a thorn in the side of this industry, that there's political payback going on?
I think the governor and the mayor, for that matter, and others, listen to a different part of the community than I listen to. So they give more credence, more credibility to the industry. The industry has the money. The industry's establishment. The industry runs the Farm Bureau. They run the Department of Ag. And so they give them more credence. You know, I look at it a little differently, and my loyalties or my bias, if you would, is on the side of precaution and on the side of protecting the health and safety of our community. I don't believe the industry. I mean, they've lied to me. They've flat out not told me the truth and misled me on a couple of occasions. And so I believe that the mayor is well-intended. The governor is well-intended. They want to do what's right, but their bias is in support of the industry because that's who has their ear. So I would tell the mayor and the governor, right on. The state needs to step up to the plate,
mm-hmm.
but let Kauai County pass 2491 also. One doesn't ace out the other one.
Uh-huh.
We can do both, and we need to do both.
Thank you, Gary. We're speaking with Councilmember Gary Hooser, who is a co-sponsor of Bill 2491. We're also joined in the booth by Representative Dee Morikawa. Thank you, Dee, for joining us here. I want to hear if my microphone level for you is good.
Thank you.
Aloha. Thank you for joining us. Gary, I have Dee in the booth.
Hi, Representative.
Hi, Gary.
I appreciated that one coming here on short notice. So thank you, Representative Morikawa, for joining the conversation, and also your presence at last Tuesday's. Was it Tuesday?
It was Friday. A Friday.
It was a Friday afternoon. I want to say it was the 27th of September, and your presentation in front of the council. Share it with listeners who might not have either heard your presentation or got a chance to listen to what you had to say. What was asked of you, and what did you share with our council members?
It was just trying to explain what the bill that I had introduced this last session and gotten passed, what it would do.
That House Bill 673.
Yes. And just pretty much to plead, I guess, with the county in giving the state a chance to implement that that law, because obviously it hasn't had a chance to show any results. And I worry about the duplication of the services. Mm-hmm. I'd like to work with the county, but not duplicate what the state is probably a little bit more ahead of the game in just certain areas. I'm not saying in this whole issue.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you, in regards to the bill, for listeners who haven't followed, 673 was a pesticide registry bill introduced by you and Representative Kawakami. It is a bill that had been introduced, as Councilmember Hooser suggested as well, your first freshman year in the House with Representative Morita.
Morita, right.
And that version didn't get out of committee. And you know, there's a shift happening. I think the awareness level is significantly advanced the cause of why we're so concerned about pesticides in our community.
Right. And as I said, new leadership in the House was probably what allowed these bills to pass, because there was a GMO bill that actually got out also. And prior sessions, it would never have had a chance. So the discussions have begun. We've been able to hear both sides. And I think if anything, any good has come out of this, the GMO issue and the pesticide issue, it's that there's more awareness. And I think there's a better chance now to collaborate with all the stakeholders on how we can do this, because ultimately, we all care for our health.
Would you say previous to this last session and previous to the bill 2491 being introduced, has there been reluctance for collaboration?
I don't think the conversation came out at all.
Mm-hmm.
So how can you collaborate on something you don't even talk about?
Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm looking at why the bills didn't get heard at the state level. And just the influence that the industry has statewide. And I can understand here on Kauai that we haven't had much conversation about it, and that conversation is growing. More voices are being heard. And as Councilmember Hooser suggested, that 10 years ago in your district, in your community, the petition that said, hey, will you guys be good neighbors?
Right. That was 3 years ago when we had that bad dust problem in Waimea. That's when it started to become a very heated discussion.
Very heated, because there was a number of years of inaction.
Yeah.
And so I guess I wonder, you know, what can we expect? I think Representative Morikawa, that we know that the industry is very well resourced. They have access to the highest levels of our government and influence policy time and time again. And how does community influence the process? How does community's concern be articulated in such a way that government responds? And that's what we're looking for right now, is responsive government. And
right.
It's happening at the local level, because 2491 is the bill on the table. But we know when you introduced 673 after the first committee, there were some changes. That things get watered down, just like 2491, we've had some amendments that some people would say, oh, that's unacceptable.
Yeah, I think you have to dig deep into the consequences of legislation.
And there's a process.
Yes, and there are consequences for everything you do, and sometimes you don't find it out till much later down the road. But I think in the version that came out, it gives the state the ability to start something, because we all agree disclosure is important. But I also feel that the Department of Health's role in this is crucial too, because they need to get out there and test.
Let's talk a little bit about this, and Councilmember Hooser, please chime in in regards to your perception of the state's willingness or the state's ability, the capacity for the state to do what Representative Morikawa is suggesting, that they... Go ahead.
I can't hear her very well.
Oh,
hardly
okay.
At all.
Okay, let me try to get her up. And then what I was asking, in regards to what would you like to see the state do? What would the state picking up the slack look like to you as the author of this bill?
One of the issues with the state legislature is that Kauai has very little presence there. I mean, we have good people, but out of 25 state senators, we have one person. We have one vote.
One vote, right.
You know, out of, 51 House members?
We have three.
We have three.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's important to Kauai is not always important to the state. Very few other places in their state is a situation like it is here. Maybe on Molokai, maybe over by Mililani or Wahiawa, there might be some pesticide issues. And so that's a big problem, is that.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have urgency statewide.
Okay.
You know, people in Hawaii Kai or Kailua or Kaimuki aren't concerned about this issue anywhere close to what we are.
Right. And that represents there's a lot of seats in those districts.
Yeah. I mean, the neighbor islands in general, we have, 8 state senators out of 25.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't even have half of the votes in the state legislature. And it's more difficult because... You know, for Dr. Evslin or the doctors from KVMH or for people to testify, you know, it's just very cumbersome. So here at the local level, you know, it's up close and personal. People can come in. We can act quicker in many ways, but yet still go to the state and get help from Representative Morikawa and others for the funding. They have the money,
right.
The much deeper pockets, and they can fund the Department of Ag and fund the Department of Health.
Let's speak about the Department of Health, because we focused a lot on the Department of Ag. We've had Chair Kokoboon, you know, meeting with the administration and Chair Fafaro. There hasn't been as much discussion about the Department of Health. And Representative Morikawa, you sit on a committee that overlooks the health. What would you like to see Councilmember Hooser from the State Department of Health step up to do?
Well, I think, you know, The concerns that the medical community has right now, I mean, there is testimony in writing from pediatricians who deliver babies and have been for 7-8 years on the west side, and they believe that there's serious health issues there. You know, the Department of Health could step up and fund some serious epidemiological study.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, there was a study funded testing for the waters for contamination of statewide waters. It was $75,000 for the entire state. You know, $75,000 is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would like them to take the situation seriously and as urgently as we see it here, number one. The state law says that the Department of Health is supposed to be monitoring GMO permits for experimental.
Mm-hmm.
When a company files... an application to do an experimental, they're supposed to file it with the Department of Health. And I don't believe that's being monitored at all. And so there's a long list, but, you know, it's health and the environment.
Yeah. Well, let me ask Representative Morikawa, Dee, your response.
Well, that's why the conversation, for me anyway, has begun with the department.
I still can't hear her.
Okay, wait. Sorry, Gary. Okay, how's that? Can you hear me now?
Uh-oh, here we go.
No.
Now we know. Gary,
how's that?
Much better.
Oh, much better,
okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
I hit the right button.
Okay, they got it. But like I said, the conversation has begun between myself and the Department of Health in these issues. I mean, I did get to grab Gary's ear Gary Gill's ear last week and asking him for more help here in getting out people to test the water, not groundwater necessarily, but any water, whether it be ocean or irrigation water, test the soil if we know what we're looking for, and test the air. Because for me, and I have told you before, I feel there are other environmental issues we need to deal with, you know, that affect people's health, and that would be the VOG, pollen exposure, and, you know, perhaps pesticides. But until we know what it really is, it's hard to penalize any organization or group when you don't know for sure what it is.
And it seems like it should be easy to find out.
It should be.
You know, and whether it's a matter of providing resources and then setting up those studies, I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of smart students and Akamai scientists who would like to help do this and find this
you
out.
You hit it right on the nose. It's about getting our students. KCC would like to be involved, I think, in pollen testing because, like I said before, the island is just a garden of greenery, and we do have pollen events. We do have VOG, and we'd like to know when these events happen and the correlation between that and illnesses in the clinics and hospitals. And that's part of the Department of Health's role, is mm-hmm. to try to find out what these things are so we can assure the people that they're on top of it.
As well as what are those harms associated with pesticide exposure or other chemicals could be in the water, drinking supplies,
yes.
or exposed at different times of the year. I have one caller I'd like to come on. Can we bring caller? You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
We're good. You're on the air with Councilmember Gary Hooser and Representative Dee Morikawa.
Hi, Gary. This is Holland from Cafe Coco, and I was just calling. Because, first of all, I had read a letter from Chuck Lasker, and I, as a citizen here on Kauai and a resident, just want to thank you for everything you've done. Because I get really upset when people kind of tear you apart and this bill apart, because it's so important for people to know. And I just want to say, I don't know why people need time to know that this is not good for Kauai. I just want to know where all the mothers are who hear that there's 200,000 pounds of pesticides being sprayed here besides normal use, and that people aren't in an uproar about it. And so I just personally want to thank you for trying to find a solution for this. I just want to also say maybe we could talk to Clayton today about how the state has handled it for him and putting it back in the state's hands, because I believe he has a lot to say about it. I've loved his testimony, and it's kind of shown me where the state is with this. And I know, Gary, you were there at the state and saw that it wasn't being done on a state level and that it had to be done on a county level. And I just want to say, as a mother, a business owner, and a citizen of Kauai, and someone that loves the Garden Island, I fully support this bill and hope that every person here calls and lets everyone know how much they support it, and that it's time for the people to start deciding what they want for this island and not the corporation. Thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Holland. You know, I think, you know, there's a lot of people, mothers and many people all over, that are very concerned, and they want to see some resolution to this. And I know that it's going to take a combination of people helping, local people in the community, students, the county has to step up, the state has to step up. And, I think Holland just really represented it well. Unfortunately, one of the chapters in the playbook for the industry is to attack the messenger. And so that comes with the territory, and it's unfortunate that happens. But when you have issues like that, like this, that's what happens. But, you know, I've been here before.
You and Councilmember Mel Raposo, you guys have a pair of big boy shorts. You wear them. You know, you know that this is part of the if you will, business that you've gotten into. And I think that, you know, both you and Representative Morikawa and other representatives, you know, have our interests at heart. I know that your colleagues do on the council, yet you're in a position right now because of authoring this bill, as well as refusing to just let it if you will, kind of wither in committee, or for it to just kind of go back to the drawing board. You're wanting to move forward, and I do believe that it's impressive to think about our community coming together in such a large number.
Dennis Fujimoto asked me about the bill and how it related to the Aloha Spirit, and it really made me think about it a lot, and it made me think about what Aloha means, and it made me think about what Kuleana means, and they go hand in hand. You know, we have a responsibility at the state level, at the county level. We have a responsibility, and I'm just trying to live up to my responsibility and work with my colleagues, Councilmember Bynum, and everybody else, and Representative Morikawa, to fulfill our responsibility. And that's to, number one, protect the health and welfare environment of our community.
Right, thank you for that, Representative Morikawa. You're nodding your head. I'd like you to chime in.
Yeah, I agree, and I've said it before. I don't think a lot of these things need to be legislated. It's things that we can do at any level of government to assure that our people are safe. Working on a law to mandate things that may have consequences later on may not be worth it, whereas, like we said, collaboration might be the way to go because you could get it done faster.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I started out, when I came on the council, one of the first meetings I had was with the industry, and I knew that this was an issue in the community, the issue of pesticides and GMOs. And so I started out down that path of collaboration. You know, I asked them, for me to make the decisions as a council member, I need some basic information. I need to know what chemicals are being sprayed. People were concerned. And when that information was not forthcoming, and then I went to the Department of Ag to get it, and I still couldn't get it. The only option for the community to get the information they need to make good decisions is through legislation. If they would have been more forthcoming and would have worked with us on this, we might not be here. But that's the fundamentals. I mean, we need to know information in order to make good decisions.
You're right, Gary. And I think introduction of that bill this past session brought out a lot of conversation, including the GMO bill. And you mm-hmm. seen you were there to see the Capitol, just hundreds of people around every day that the bills were heard.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Go ahead.
The Capitol is a fascinating place, but it's packed with people fighting for their own self-interest, and it's about competing priorities. So you've got fighting for education. You got, you know, GMO people fighting for their stuff. You've got, you know, just everyone's fighting and working and trying to get a larger share of the resources. And I think one good thing that's come out of this conversation, which of many good things, is that this issue has been raised very high now on the radar screen. And so during the upcoming legislative session, I'm hopeful that there's more attention will be paid for to it in terms of funding for positions that are needed.
I'm sorry about that, Gary. I thought I had a phone caller coming on. Caller, please call back if you can. We'll try to get you on up. Gary, I know that you've got a 5 o'clock date, and I did want to try to get that phone caller on for another question. But being that we have a meeting on Tuesday, starting at 9 o'clock. And this is being chaired by the chair. This is the council committee of the whole. Is that the name of the group looking at it?
No, this is the council itself. This is the full council chaired by Chair Jay Trafaro. And there is no end time. So I asked the chair directly if we were going to have time, sufficient time to deal with the bill, and he said yes. And so I'm hopeful that we could put some final amendments on the table. We can hash through them, the council members, and those that we like, we support. Those we don't like, we don't support. We do a little wordsmithing. And at the end of the day on Tuesday, we vote the bill out.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would go to the mayor's office for him to either sign it or veto it or do nothing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that is my hope. I think many people in the community, regardless of the side of the issue you're on, people are over it. We've had plenty of time to work on it. Let's do the business that we're supposed to do, do the work, and vote like we're supposed to. Be responsible for our own decisions on it.
Really, moving on. And I think that it's something that it's wishful thinking, Gary, that you know, we're moving on, because this is I know today there was an interview from a New York radio station of a journalist who wrote a story for Salon magazine. We had the New York Times piece recently done, and again, the GMO technology and the GMO issue, separate from the pesticides. Right. And in some ways, I think that the criticism of the bill being, you know, kind of cloudy because you combine pesticides and GMOs, you know, that's a whole nother topic. But that GMO issue ain't going away. It just is not. And until we have better understanding, until we have better data and evidence for the science community that is wanting to prove that it's either harmless or that there's harm, that's not going away anytime soon as well. And I really appreciate you taking time to talk story with us. Do you have time for a phone call?
Sure.
Okay, we'll bring that person on. Come on up. Phone caller, you are there with Representative D. Morikawa and Councilmember Gary Hooser. Hello.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear us?
Okay, Clayton Kubo, Waimea Kawa, yeah?
Thank you for calling, Clayton.
How's it there, Mr. Hooser? How's it going?
Hi, Clayton. Good. It's just, we'll know on Tuesday how it's going.
Well, we'll see how it goes. It's been a whole lot of years on this end coming. Finally, somebody's listening. But as for you, Mrs. Morikawa, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Yeah. You know who is me, yeah?
Yes.
Okay. You got to remember, yeah, you represent the so-called people on this side, yeah?
Yes, I live there,
I really
too.
Hope you go in this time, okay? I really hope you go in this time. And I can say that again this time, okay? Because now you get plenty of people voicing out all their opinions. You know, plenty of people, not just only us from my mail, plenty along this whole island. And how are you guys going to act if you guys don't help the whole island? How are you guys going to look? You know, and it's like, you look at what the mayor house, even on Oahu, and I've been getting phone calls and text messages about what had happened on Tuesday. You know, honestly, I kind of didn't believe what you guys, you know, these politicians are thinking. You guys cannot even support us. You know, it's hard for me to talk even right now. You know, this is a very emotional subject for me.
I know, Clayton. I feel for you. My husband and I have had young people in the valley pass away from cancer.
Well, so, that's what we've been saying from all this long.
Yes,
know?
And I hear you.
When is somebody going to step up to the plate and do something?
Mm-hmm. And I want you to know that it's been 3 years now, and we finally got a baby step at the legislature in that disclosure. We understand is very important. And it's my commitment to move forward hereafter and find ways to bring the people in to assure that we're safe, bring the people in to do the enforcement, to do the checking. Because for me, I fear too for my family. We're all in Waimea, you know that. I can't do it overnight, so I'm just pleading with you guys to give me a chance to do what I can on this end. But I also take into consideration the economic issues out there because, you know, we've got many families employed in these companies, and I want to make sure that they're safe too.
Yeah, but if you guys gonna put money ahead of, I'm gonna speak for my son right now. Ahead of his health. I know all my testimonies, I have not said that much about my son, okay? And people know why I don't say too much about him. Yeah. But my son has some issues, and there's no doubt. You know, but we need people to come out and do something. about what's going on this whole island, the uprising that has begun. Yeah. 13 years ago, the petition came out, not three. 13 years ago. Okay, now it's over 13. Yeah. And I have the proof. Yeah. Now, in a way, where people gotta start standing up and doing what they know what is right. And I know you guys know what is right. I know you guys know. How can these companies be spraying that much chemicals? That is unbelievable. You know, what I hear about, when you spray around your house and all that, no can even compare to the amount that these companies spray. Big time. Just today already, I come home yesterday, I see the tractor up there. I get one call from somebody, you know what I mean? Clayton, you got to take picture. Okay, I just come off the plane. What's going on? Today I see the tractor going again in the field. I took some pictures. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like I said before, the Board of Health, they never do nothing. The Department of Ag, same thing. They make you feel. The Wahine make me feel, and even my friend, Wendell Kabutan, they make us feel like we liars. And now let me say this on the radio. Okay, I know Wendell is not listening, but I will say him anyway. Wendell Kabutan was driven from his home in Waimea. Driven. Okay? Are you going to act? He even scared to come back to his house. What's up with that? Yeah. He was driven again. I will say again, driven from his home in Waimea. The front line to Pioneer Research Facility. You know what? Driven from his home? How does that sound? That doesn't sound too good. And I'm glad that I'm not affected like how my friend is. Unless I won't have to pack up my mother, my son, and we won't have to leave where we live. How fair is that? It's not fair. It's not fair for us. You guys need to step up and do something already. And I'm going to say this, I beg you guys, after 13 years of this, you guys got to step up and do something.
Hello, Clayton, you still there? Uh-oh. I hit the wrong button at the wrong time. Clayton, you call him why? Sorry about that. I got to also do this at the top end. There we go. You are listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA, Kilauea, here in the beautiful North Shore of Kauai. I am so sorry for the fat finger on that one. I think Gary Hoosier had to get off the phone, and I inadvertently hit the wrong button and got Clayton discharged as well. I do want to just finish my top of the hour, 90.9 FM Honolulu, 92.7 in Anaholamoloa, 95.1 FM on the cable dial, streaming worldwide at kkcr.org, and 91.9 FM islandwide on Oahu. You'll hear us at 104.7 and K284AL Hala'iva, KAQA Kilauea, and KKCR Honolulu. This is Laura Christine. This is the Get Low Show. Just joking. It is out of the box. We are going to be here for another hour, have Representative D. Morikawa with us from the West Side. We've been talking about Bill 2491. Also had a chance encounter with a farmer on the way over here. She might be calling in to talk story about some of the issues related to pesticides, herbicides. I know that sometimes those are interchangeable. So you got us here for an hour. I want to let you also know that
the views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
Right on. Thanks, X-Man. And we're getting some instructions from station manager Dean Rogers. I apologize, Clayton Kubo, for the big fat finger to hit the X button. So you're welcome to call us back on. Dean Morikawa, thank you for joining us. You know, every time I've heard Clayton speak, I've met him only once, but we've had a couple phone conversations. A very compelling story. You've heard it before.
Yes. Not just him. Yeah.
No. And this is what is kind of the thing that at the heart of the matter really has, I think, rallied other folks of just saying, boy, I mean, it's hard for me to think about that. You know, I have a 13-year-old, you know, and she's at a school now that is surrounded by GMO fields. And the issues, you know, that the folks at the Island School community are wondering, you know, this was at one time limited. Now it's becoming an issue that other communities are going to have to deal with because we also know they're by the hospital. We also know that there's plans to move beyond. Already inland, I have a friend who dumps toilets at portable toilets at the remote sites. You know, his business would be directly impacted if the folks, the worst case scenario for folks who are concerned about the economic impact if the GMO companies leave. You know, his company will suffer because he has a very large contract with two out of the four big guys. And so, you know, I know you share that concern in regards to you have families on the west side that's their paycheck, right? And I've mentioned in regards to testimony, you know, what is our plan? What is our plan for the transition away from this type of farming that is on the downslope? Because no matter how much they'd like us to believe, it's not a product that people are buying in the numbers that they thought they would. Nor is it one that folks now, after a number of years, are questioning its validity or questioning its integrity, questioning its usefulness when there's other models. And these models are viable, models that we could have on the west side, certainly elsewhere on the horizon, whether it's industrial ag and it's hemp, or it's diversified agriculture that includes market crops and value-added products, all of these things that we know our community needs.
Yes, you're right. You know, it's so tough to kick out an industry right now. But yes, there's a lot of space to bring in new industry. Mm-hmm. And perhaps, you know, as time goes on, the conversations come out, you find that that's not a popular decision any longer. So you move on to different types of ag. And like you said, hemp has been a conversation at the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the who will put up the money to do the manufacturing, you know, that type of thing. What can we produce out of it? I know there's a lot of things that come out of hemp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, look at our shrimp company out there. They're really moving on to different products. The shrimp is first class, all nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
And they've gone into clams now. They have the permits to sell clams, which I've tasted and are very good. And they're also a source of cleaning out their water. So, you know, that's the kind of industry that can grow and make us more sustainable. I mean, if we get a dairy one day, there's a new technology on how to make dairies a lot environmentally friendly.
Sure.
If that happens to come this way, that's another sustainable product that we can keep for Hawaii.
Yeah, and I mean, why bring that milk over on a boat when we could just have it down in the pasture below? I think we got a phone call coming on up. Go ahead, phone caller. Hello, are you joining us here on Out of the Box with Rep. D. Morikawa?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you. Can you hear us?
Well, you know, I think Gary and Tim and Clayton, Dustin Barker, and all the people that are, and people like you, you know, you're all heroes. You're all heroes. The one thing about this whole GMO thing is it has, like Clayton said, it's brought people together from, you know, no matter what race or religion or walk of life, they're all joining hands and coming together, and it's just a powerful, wonderful thing. You know, I admire everybody's participation. You know, the mayor, you know, this deferral, it's like he got it from somebody else's playbook. It's like he you know, I mean, he didn't think of the idea by himself. Somebody gave it to him and said, this is how we want you to play it, you know, and it's just terrible. And I'm just like all those West Side workers that depend on their jobs. I depend on my income to pay for my rent and buy my food and this and that, you know. But, you know, as far as that goes, I know I'd rather be down and out, you know, than getting cancer, you know. And somehow, you know, all this fear of losing jobs, somehow, you know, I want them to believe that the community of Kauai will help them. You know, because when it comes down to it, all we need to survive and have a happy life is good food, clean water, and some shelter. And we can dispense with most of the other material objects that we have that a good income provides us, you know. I mean, education, you know, you want to put your kids through college and that costs a fortune and this and that, but at anyways, I'll let you go and thanks, you know, you're a moderator. Tell me your name again.
My name's Jimmy.
Jimmy, that's right. Jimmy Tahia, I had a senior moment there. You're a hero to me. You know, and KKCR is.
KKCR is a hero.
Yeah, they are. They're sitting up there on the hill transmitting enlightenment, you know. And I just want to thank all of you again for doing your best to try to buck the establishment. It's such a challenge, and it's a difficult fight, you know. And obviously, it's so disappointing that the mayor has to defer this again, you know, because it's just out of somebody else's playbook. It's hypocrisy. Anyways, thank you.
Well, thank you for the kind words, and I pat on the back to all the volunteers who make this radio station happen, as well as you listeners and supporters. There we go. And then, sorry about that. I'm going to take a quick interlude from another volunteer who's doing great work in the community. Oh, wrong button again.
Well, I'm Felicia Cowden, and I really just want to speak to trust. And I want to appreciate you guys, all of you, for putting the effort out that's here. And I'm probably a little different in that I'm not discouraged with you. And I think that when you're looking at this issue, this is really most of the people of this island coming to the people like, who will take care of them? And I think that it comes down to, like, the biotech companies, that people don't trust them. Maybe they can rise up and do what's being asked. And if what they're saying is true and they're not doing so many bad things, then the ease will come and people will become better neighbors to them. The state, we don't trust the state at all. And I think that an example that was pretty recent that was very telling this last spring is when the governor and the president of the Senate put 2 months Santo lobbyists in for the Department of Water right after Oahu did some major hard-fought victory of denying Monsanto 2.6 million gallons of water a day that they were going to divert. So here they had some big victory. And then what happens, right around, they turn around and go, okay, well, we'll just replace the water board. And when we look at the governor, like I've seen it over and over again on the little YouTube videos where they're showing him saying, you don't have to lobby me, you know, to the industry, that he wants them there. It's really, really clear what side of the fence these people are on. And I know that you guys constructed a bill that, frankly, most of the people I know who are concerned about the industry feels is really, frankly, very tepid. And but we are trusting you that you're taking a step that you actually can take. And so it's really important to not do something different. And I tell you, I got everybody asking me to run for your job. I'm looking at this side of the aisle. I know a lot of people are wanting many of the council members replaced. And I'm saying, you know, we got a great council. We actually have a really good balance of knowledge and skill. And I know it takes courage, and I know that you're being bullied. I've been going to all these meetings and these different scientists, And there's pretty good science out there, and it's the difference between long-term and acute illness. And I don't think that passing this bill is going to kill this industry. Some people may want that to be the outcome, but I don't think it will. It will just cause them to have better practices, and they can adapt. If they don't want to adapt, it's a choice. Last thought, I just want to ask if somebody gave you an amazing house right next to the field downwind, would you move in? If you hesitate at all, that's something to think about.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There you go, something to think about. We have a caller joining us here on the air out of the box. Caller, are you still there?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, terrific. Thank you for joining the conversation with Representative D. Morikawa and Jimmy Trujillo with Tim Kalai. Man in the phone. Thanks, Tim.
Hi, guys.
Howdy.
Hi, D. Thanks. This is Randy calling from Kekaha.
Hey, Randy. Hi. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I've been watching this thing unfold for quite a while, and it seems like until the Agricultural Development Corporation members are truly representative of what their charter is, which is to create a sustainable, grown here, sold here, eaten here, you know, way to avoid the boom bust of sugar cane and pineapple, it doesn't matter how much noise we make. I mean, the chairwoman of that, she's in charge of Grow Farm. You know, she went ahead and let out how many acres in Lihue for this, I can't remember which of the chemical companies she leased it to, but not her personally. But so Dee, I don't know. How do we get that board changed? How do we get the Agriculture Development Corp members changed? And how do we get the, you know, the Westside Kekaha Agricultural Corporation?
Yeah, I
filled know. filled with members that are actually true to the charter of why they were created.
Let me just ask, because I think some people might not know who the ADC is or what the Agricultural Development Corporation is. So can you tell us a little bit about their...
Oh, sure. Well, I'm not an expert on it, but from what I can tell, it was formed about 20 years ago when pineapple was falling apart and sugarcane was starting to fall apart. And their charter is to create a sustainable agriculture industry with the idea to make products that are useful for the actual state of Hawaii.
Okay, so all that sounds good. Now you're suggesting that their board or their directors,
they're all members of large landholders, and most of them are appointed by the governor himself. In fact, he switched it all over when he came back in.
Uh-huh.
Governor Abercrombie, because, well, I don't know. The money.
Anything you would add to that, Representative?
Well, Randy, I'll admit to you that I'm not really familiar about the makeup of the ADC. I do know that they're a very small department in the state, but they do contract out to the KAA. But,
yeah, they're the ones that actually gave the leases out.
Right.
State land.
Yes.
And so, I don't know, Dee, maybe we can go ahead and try and rewrite the leases so that disclosure is part of the lease.
Yeah,
there you go. Nice suggestion.
And it's not just disclosure of restricted. It's disclosure of anything. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
And maybe we have to hold them accountable to how their decision to lease the land to whoever they decide to lease it to,
mm-hmm.
Is reflective of what their charter is.
Yeah. The shrimp company is part of that organization. I know there's that farm up in Koke. Mm-hmm. that are growing vegetables and such, they're part of that group also.
Yeah, there's good and there's bad tenants, I mean, depending on how you want to look at the issues.
Right, and I have heard that they're willing to lease land to anyone else who's willing to come in and do whatever ag they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's just
right,
that people haven't been coming in.
And maybe that's going to change, I don't know. I think the earlier conversations about how to create a market, maybe with some processing, you know, we're talking about hemp. You know.
Yeah, we're talking about hemp, exactly.
But also, I mean, my wife drives from Kekaha to the east side every winter to buy organic produce, mm-hmm. because she can't buy on the west side. And it sells out. It sells out quickly. So obviously there is a market, maybe not small enough to justify the entire west side in all organic farming, but there is a market, and I think if people realize that organic produce bought at that level, at the farmer's market level, is actually cheaper than, pardon me, the Tonys, but cheaper than going to Big Save and buying stuff from California.
You're right. They're fresher, too.
You can feed your family cheaper by buying good produce that's grown locally.
Right.
Well, and also, what is developing a food economy look like for us? How do we benefit? How does local workers benefit, whether those who are involved in the production of that, as well as those who consume it, because it's a far superior product?
Exactly. And I think that is the real job of this Agricultural Development Corporation. They're the ones that are supposed to figure out how we can be sustainable, not just how they can maximize the profits on the shareholders that own the land that they let up these huge 20-year leases on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'd love to see something like Malo Farms on Oahu.
On
I mean, if we could have something like that and get the college students, even high school students, involved in internships so we can build that interest so they can see a future in ag, that's probably where we really need to go.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah, maybe we can combine that with the community college's restaurateurship program, you know,
absolutely.
Where
we actually get the people that are studying to be nutritionists and supply all the restaurants to not only supply the restaurants, but maybe supply the public schools.
Yes, and I can assure you that Chancellor Cox is really headed in that direction of ag on Kauai and how to spur that interest in children, not adults necessarily, children, bringing them in from the school, the elementary school level.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys are part of it, but, you know, I get bombarded by the newsletters. And one of them is associated with the Kakua Foundation that, you know, Jack Johnson and company put together.
Mm-hmm.
But they're really active.
Right.
Now, maybe it's because he can go ahead and bankroll the whole thing. But I don't think it takes that much money to get parents interested in getting good food to their kids at school.
I agree with you, and I think that there's incentive for us to do it, that there's capital available to do that, and that we'll see some multipliers in our economic development when we do this.
I agree. I also think that there's a whole bunch of other ways to raise funds. I mean, remember when the West Side got rained out and Polo Holly was going to be shut down for 2 years and the DLNR didn't want to do anything because they said, oh, it's going to cost $2 million, come back 2 years from now. And everybody just ponied up and did it themselves. Well, there's all this type of kickstart fundraising now that's available. You know, so maybe if we get matching or promised matching grants, we can put together some nonprofit LLCs or something. And we don't have to rely on the feds or the state or the county to fund all this stuff.
Right.
That's right. It's about a lot of public-private partnerships.
Yeah. So thanks for what you do, Dee. Thanks for everybody that's been pushing on this 2491.
Thank
and,
you.
And just keep the faith.
Right on. Mahalo's ready for joining us here on Out of the Box. We have another caller right behind you. Caller, you're on the air.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Murakawa, last March there was an interview on KKCR with a professor from UH who had been commissioned by the legislature to determine the opportunities the state has for sustainable agriculture. He made a statement that it was one of the things his survey or study determined was that the state had the capability to become the world's biggest supplier of organic seeds, but that window of opportunity was closing rather quickly. I would like to know if you're familiar with any discussions that might be going on to further that strategy.
No, that's unfortunately, I'm not on those committees that get into those types of discussions. As you know, I'm just more familiar with the health issues and human services.
Okay.
Although, you know, I listen in whenever I can, and sorry, I don't understand why something like that was said.
Okay, well, evidently there's some sort of survey that was done about sustainability that's been given to the legislature. Okay, I do have a question that does regard health. Quite a few years ago, over 10 years ago, I witnessed a worker spraying Roundup at one of our little bridges right around the waterway. And I called the health department and the, I forget what they call it. The
Ag.
Public services.
Okay.
To say, you know, perhaps your worker needs some retraining, that the manufacturer clearly states on the label not to spray within 500 yards of water. And I was told that it's state policy to continue to spray around our waterways. And I want to know whether that policy...
Maybe back then, not, no longer today, I can assure you that the state, especially on Kauai, the State Department of Transportation has stopped spraying right now because they are not allowed to do so around any possible waterways by their own environmental agency within the Department of Transportation. So they have been told to get permits from the Department of Health. And with that permit, you know, comes extensive training and regulations. So
okay.
That is no longer happening here on Kauai, I can tell you that. I'm not sure about the county policies, but I know the county does not spray. They can only spray what's safe to be used around water. But,
okay,
you know,
I'm glad to know that policy is
yeah,
updated.
Every agency, like I said before, has to have a policy in place for any herbicide or pesticide type spraying. So, you know, this unrestricted and restricted thing, you know, I think it has to be for all. There's no harm in knowing what's being sprayed when, so people who are sensitive can stay away from those areas.
Correct, right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Thank you for calling. I was sharing with you, Dee, earlier, as Tim and I were driving in, we ran across a farmer who was putting up some fence, and we stopped because I know her. She's a beekeeper, and she shared that she had a chance encounter with a herbicide applicator and a neighboring property. The maintenance guys were spraying along the bridge and the fence, and she went to approach them to ask them not to spray. And while she approached them, she got, if you will, a bit of drift, and she said that she could taste it. It was kind of one of those things like, wow, I mean, that stuff happens. And she was, you know, a little kind of upset by the whole thing. And the applicator was saying, oh, you know, when she was asking him, you know, you're not wearing any kind of protective equipment. You're not, you know, you can't blow, you know, apply this stuff in the wind, can you? And he was like, it's just Roundup. And I think that's one of the issues that we need to continue to have emphasize is that we're just relying on these chemical inputs that we really don't know the safety of them. We would like to believe that they're, as the manufacturers suggest, safe for residential use, but there's evidence out there. There's a number of scientists who are advocating that this is linked to a number of different health issues.
I think, Jimmy, anytime you can buy something in a store, most people feel confident that it's safe enough to use anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But we all know that even bug spray, when you spray it, it's an obnoxious smell. And somehow your body tells you this is not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, with education, conversations, we all realize that's not something we should be spraying around kids especially. So it's not just restricted stuff. It's anything you use that if it's going to kill a pest, it can kill anything.
And like we were sharing during Felicia's testimony, you know, is this now the time? Have we raised the critical mass? Have we raised the awareness that, you know, we need to demand from our local institutions, whether it's the county park, and you know our county government better than most, if it's our DOE facilities, or if it's a Department of Transportation roadway or harbor, small harbor or large, I don't care, if we have just a matter of practice of using those inputs that are known to be harmful.
Yeah. Like I said, awareness. It's just getting more and more public now. People are more concerned. I think the state and county government need to step up and start to initiate their own policies. Once you lead by example, it has a tendency to go down to people.
Yeah, it's one of those things that we, you know, we all make choices, right? And we can choose to support or not support the methods that we either grow our food or prepare our food.
Yes.
You know, the previous caller, Randy, I think, was suggesting that maybe we could have school gardens provide school for their own consumption.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, right.
but then the Department of Health steps in and says,
yeah, there's some problems with that in schools with liability. And, that's why we can never get school gardens passed out of the legislature because of the liability issue. They don't allow us to provide the food to the students pending any illness that may occur. But, yeah, we just need to work through that.
We need to work through that. These are some of the challenges that are in front of us. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do think that our need to create some transition plans because of the fact that we know whether it was sugar, whether it's pineapple, whether it's GMO, we have boom and bust,
yeah,
right? But we know that we're always going to want to have, you know, local produced foods that we can verify, we can say, yes, this was made locally, and I am trusting it,
right,
to provide.
That's where the GMO issue is so critical, in that you know that most things are modified, so you need to go and find the things you know for sure are not,
mm-hmm,
and are safe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But what the, you know, one interesting thing that came out of that legislation 673 was that we found out termite companies would be affected by the bill, so we had to take them out. But you know, that's something that we need here, termiting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who's going to say no, you can't do it because it's that or your house?
Right. And back to, you know, some of the issues that people raise is that a consumer makes a choice to call the Terminix or the, you know, whoever that might be and say, we would like your service. Yet Clayton Kubo never asked to subscribe to that dust, never asked to subscribe to the threat of drift, never, you know, supported by going down to the corner store and buying a six-pack of that, whatever Pioneer produces. And so this is where our local government, when we go and buy Roundup by the ton or the gallons, that we are supporting that, and that there's alternatives where we often forget those alternatives are viable. They're out there. They might have a higher front end cost, but on the back end, the benefits, they're no longer a liability. That investment was made, and we've got a return. And this is what I think we're hopeful in developing our local food economy, that we'll have a return on that investment. That Chancellor Cox's ideas of having some type of food production, ag production, a sustainability type of academy for young students who are figuring it out. And what do they want to do? They want to stay here and live the good life? Well, here's an opportunity for you. Or maybe they want to further their education, but this is where they want to start out at and come and go and advance their careers, advance their knowledge, and advance, contribute to the community. That is one of our Department of Ed's student learning outcomes, is to be a community contributor. What better way than to feed a family, to provide at your local neighborhood market things that you grew in your backyard? We've got another phone caller. Okay. I saw a yellow light flying there. And Tim, chime in because you're no longer talking on the phone. If you'd like,
I don't even know if I'm on the air.
We can hear you good.
Okay, good. You know, it's just thank you so much. You know, Deke, you know, Morikawa, for coming in, you know, sharing your mana'o, and just for everybody. And I really do appreciate your mana'o too, Jimmy, you know, putting things out there. I know that we had a couple of, you know, callers that were a little bit shy, maybe didn't want to get on the air, you know, and when they were talking about these issues, you know, these big companies, you know, they were very specific about us using the correct terminology, you know, affiliated with this. And I know that you folks touched on this a little bit about, you know, genetically modified organisms. You know, nature does that in her own time and in her own way as well, too. You know, but that's a proper natural process. Yeah, we can speed those things up.
Sure, hybridization and evolution kind of, you know, goes hand in hand in many ways.
It goes with that. But now the other term that she was, you know, wanting us to really know and, you know, hit the topic on here, and that was basically about genetically engineered,
mm-hmm,
you know, organisms. This,
mm-hmm,
is a whole different animal, a whole different ballgame. And that's how we should be applying when we're putting in legislature and things of this nature, that we use these correct terms, you know, because that is when you're really doing research and science manipulated, you know, elements to bring out crops. Like, you know, nature does not, maybe in her way she may, with certain defenses over millions of years, produce certain saps or something in a tree or a plant that would evolve, you know. But when we get something, you know, heavy, you know, like a Roundup molecule or something that is built into this corn plant, you know, and then we're doing this, I mean, inevitably I myself always think, wow, if I'm going to start consuming this, if bugs, which are kind of on the small scale of the foundational working of things, you know, are being maque or dying from this thing, don't you think after a while, if I start eating this as well too, that this may possibly have ramifications on me? You know, I mean, common sense would dictate that. You know, that's why I personally, and this is my opinion, I like to stick to my organics and just do it the way it kind of always was, and hopefully also maybe in an attunement with the way the culture, our culture here in Hawaii'i, you know, how they have always done things for thousands of years, been able to sustain themselves, you know, through high and thin, you know, and so it's just, it's to me a way of evolving, but that's a personal thing. You know, genetically modified, I can live, I think, maybe with a few aspects of that. It is maybe speeding up nature to a degree, just not putting in irregular elements, you know, putting in a piece of a fish into something else, or what? I mean, these are just the things they're playing with.
Right. I had a very good conversation with a associate professor here on Kauai, KCC staff, faculty member, and you know, there's a number who feel similar that there are some good beneficial GMO or GE actions that there might be some applications where it's appropriate, where it is something that is going to benefit mankind.
And I can applaud that.
Right. And I wish I could remember the examples. I know one was something that was going to lower the type of blood clotting
agent. Yeah.
Yeah, if you will, that would be, we could grow that blood clotting. I don't want to call it a tissue, but it was, yeah, an agent, and that could have benefits.
Right.
But this was all done in a laboratory, was all contained. It didn't require open air testing. And this is what really concerns folks, is not knowing.
Not knowing.
And I'll go back to this issue of how to collaborate with folks who are not reasonable. Because I think it's reasonable to ask, we want to know what's going on. We want to know where that stuff is being sprayed. We want to know what that stuff is being sprayed. We'd like to know how much of that stuff is being sprayed. And I think that the issue of a moratorium is appropriate, because this growth has been phenomenal. It's been significant. In our ag areas, it's really the only growth that's, I think it's off the chart in regards to what else do we produce besides queen bees on the Big Island, right. Coffee, and then seed. That's our big export. Those are our commodity crops. And I want to have us really consider what are some of the alternatives to being commodity-based agriculture.
Well, you have to have diversification, I think, to be sustainable in anything. You know, monocropping of any one product or thing, and even if you only have a select few items, you know, on a large scale like that, is not and will not sustain us as a state. If, once again, forgive me, I go to the, you know, the conspiracy, or just the a thing where if everything shut down principle, you know, what if things were not coming in? You know, we all get stuck here somehow, you know, or you know, take that scenario. What will those few crops that we have, and once again, even what's happening and what we're growing out there, it's not for human consumption as far as I know.
Well, there you go.
Know? In a roundabout way it is, when the cow eats the corn, you know, this will eventually eat the cow, you know, but there too, you know, you got to ask yourself, you know, it's not direct, and it's not for us, you know, to make tortillas.
Right. I want to just share, because I got a Facebook note. She asked, could you announce this on your show? And, you know, and I appreciate listeners and community members who forward information about upcoming events or issues that are pertinent to them. This is going to be happening on, I think it's Saturday, October 12th, coming up. It's the March Against Monsanto. It's a World Food Day, so it's a solidarity march. It's a sign-waving event. Please make signs and bring them. This is a family event. Ohana, please pass it on. Post it on your Facebook. Invite your friends and family. October 12th, 2013, activists around the world will unite to march against Monsanto's. Here we go. Where's the date? 10 a.m. to 11. No, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. I can't see on the poster where the meeting place is. It's not really telling me. Here we go. We will meet at the courtyard by Papayas at 9:30 a.m. So this is in Kapaw Town. And then at 10 to march along the highway where there will be a rally and some sign waving. So that's this Saturday. If you want more information, you can email MAM Kauai Organizers. So that's March Against Monsanto, MAM Kauai Organizers at gmail.com. Or if you're a Twitter folks, you can follow them at Twitter, hashtag MAM Kauai, MAM Kauai. We got a phone call coming our way. Right on, we'll punch that one down. Nope, wrong one. Try it again. Nope, nope.
Hello.
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 Try it again. No, sorry. Not working. Call back, please, because I can't take the blame on that one. I didn't do nothing. So we'll get you back. That's an event that's coming up this weekend. Another one that we'll try that again. Go ahead. Bring them on up. You're going to have to hang up the phone. Yeah, put them on hold. There we go. Get them going. Try it one more time. Hey, are you there?
Yes.
Can you hear me now?
Terrific. So the subject is alternative ways of dealing with Roundup. First lesson comes from ancient Rome. Rome was tired of being ransacked by Carthage. They went off to Carthage, they defeated them, and they sowed salt into the agricultural fields so Carthage could never rise again. Now let's forward to 1933. In 1933, there was an article in the newspaper about how towns in the Midwest of the United States were spraying salt water along the sides of the highways in order to keep back the weeds. So my question to our highway department and our homeowners is, do you think you have access to salt water? Is this something you want to experiment with instead of poisoning your family? I think it's worth the experiment to see what it takes to use salt water instead of Roundup.
Well, there you go. I mean, talk about engaging students.
Off the phone.
Well, thank you for calling. We'll talk about that. I mean, we can have a science project based on that, controls and maybe even bring in, if you will, so we don't have to have our children spraying the Roundup, a professional pesticide applicator, somebody who's licensed who could talk a little bit about, well, not a little, but talk a lot about the concerns, the reason why he has to be trained to use that. I think our farmer friend who if you will experienced the drift of his neighbor's spray was totally appalled that this person wasn't following any type of protective equipment, any protocol that says when there's people around, don't spray this right in front of them, or if the wind is blowing 10-15 miles per hour, don't spray it. No, it's just Roundup. We've got another caller here. Aloha, caller, you're on the air.
Hey, aloha. Thanks for taking my call.
Jonathan Jay, thank you for joining us here. I was going to talk a little bit about the petition, just because I saw it on Facebook, and Power to the People. I'm not sure if that's what you wanted to talk about, but...
Well, talking all about the GMO and the GE and stuff is real important, so I just want people to know that while Bill 2491 is making its way towards the mayor's desk, we've got another issue come up on the island, and that has to do with KIUC and their desire to punish people who didn't choose to have the smart meters with a monthly fee. And the board just took that action last week at their KIUC board of directors meeting, and so we're going to challenge that action. And so we've got a petition that's going around right now, and we're gathering signatures because the charge for analog meter havers is unfair. It's unjust. It's not right to charge people just because they have a different kind of meter. For example, you guys with the radio station are located up on the North Shore. Well, you need miles and miles of extra wire and all kinds of extra telephone poles and stuff that people in LA and Hanapepe, for example, who live next to the power plant, they don't need. So should you guys have to pay more for your power? No. Because the infrastructure costs are normalized, are averaged throughout the entire membership, and we all pay the same rate. So that's how it should be with the meters as well. And so that's why we're having a petition for fairness in billing, and I just wanted to let people know about that.
Jonathan, how could folks get either access to this petition to get more signatures, or if they wanted to give you their John Hancock on there?
Well, if you have access to online, you can go to planetoasis.org. That's all one word, planetoasis.org. Or you can go to p2pkauai.org, and their petition, a link for the petition is there, and you can download it and print it up and sign it. If you don't have access to, like if you don't have a printer or something like that, at planetoasis.org you can find out different places around the island, like for example, Blue House Booksellers, the new bookstore in the Dragon Building in Kapa'a. They'll have forms there that you can go and pick up. And you can also drop off your filled forms there as well.
And what's the goal of number of signatures? How many folks are we trying to enlist in this
We have campaign? 20 working days, which means, you know, Monday through Friday, 20 days, business days, to gather 350 signatures. So it's not a whole heck of a lot. There's 10 times more people than that have opted out of the smart meter program, but it's just the logistics of getting everybody to sign the piece of paper and to make sure that they have the right name on the account and the right account number and all that. That's not so easy to do. There's only been one successful petition drive in the history of KIUC in all of its 10 years. And so I'm real pleased that Adam Asquith is going to be working with us on this petition drive as well, so we get the benefit of his experience on successfully having a petition.
Mm-hmm. Well, mahalo for getting the word out and taking the initiative, if you will, to draft the petition, bring it up to community's awareness, and then taking some action with Aloha.
Well, you know, especially the Aloha part, it's just the right thing to do. You know, I think as a community, we should all stand together, and we should all equally bear the cost of what it takes to run the electricity on the island. We're all in it together. And that's one of the points of being a co-op, is we're all, you know, all members are equal. And so I'm real happy and real proud with Aloha to go forward and gather these signatures, because it's all about basic fairness and about making sure that no members get punishment for not towing the line and getting the meter that that they said they're supposed to get. So, because people should have freedom of choice, and freedom of choice doesn't mean that you're going to pay extra if you choose X rather than Y. So I'm real happy to be doing that, just out of basic principles of fairness.
Right on. Well, we appreciate that. I got to do this right here, right now.
Hi, this is Mose. Tune into the Acoustic Luau Thursday evenings from 6 to 8 p.m. You won't hear a lot of brand names, but you will hear some darn good contemporary singer-songwriters, along with a wide range of other acoustic music. That's the Acoustic Luau, Thursdays from 6 to 8 p.m., right here on our community radio station, KKCR.
There you go. Mahalo, Jonathan, for hanging in there for that 40-second blurb, because in 15 minutes you will be hearing the Acoustic Luau with the world's smartest man.
Well,
Moses is in the house. I got a question for you from Tim, Jonathan. We had a caller earlier who had a question about related to smart meters and different things like that.
Yeah, good afternoon, Jonathan, Jay. You know, this is Tim in the booth here with Jimmy and with our representative, Dean.
Hey, Aloha.
Yeah, Aloha, my brother. And what she was inquiring about, and I just want, do you know any information pertaining to these new digital meters that are replacing some of the smart meters in lieu or while they're waiting for the old analog meters that they'd like to be placed on?
What's your question?
Well, the question I'm asking is, do you know anything about these, you know, pertaining to these new digital meters and whether they are, I mean, they claim that they were safe for us. And are they radio wave free, unlike the smart meters, you know, that have been putting out all of these, you know,
sure,
pulses and things of that nature?
The EMF. Well, right. There's been several generations of meters,
okay,
that the industry has released over the last several years. And I believe with the digital meters, they have a low-level pulse that can be read from the street. So
correct.
When the meter comes by, they don't have to actually get out of the truck or whatever. They can just aim a little gun at it and read the meter like that.
Okay. So And I guess this is what this person was saying, is please don't wait. If you have a smart meter, you know, to wait only for the analog. That she says in the interim, these are relatively safe, if there is a term to be used as such, you know, that you can do these.
And privacy is a really big issue, and that's an issue that's constitutionally protected.
Right.
So I would really encourage people who, if they're concerned about their health and they're concerned about privacy, for when they're dealing with KIUC, to really emphasize the privacy concerns, because that's something that's constitutionally guaranteed and protected by law.
Hear, hear.
So that's the strongest argument that can be made.
Okay, well, thanks once again, you know, for all that you're doing and for the petition that you're circulating and getting about, you know.
Well, I want to thank you guys for doing such a great show, and I also want to put a thank you out to all the Akamai listeners, because it was just last week when I was doing the show that a listener called up and said, hey, KIUC is trying to add a surcharge onto the people's bills who have analog meters. And I thought, wow, that's not right.
Right.
And I had a little bit of experience with that, and so I knew we could do a petition to challenge the board action, and I'm real pleased to be doing that out of basic fairness to everyone on the island.
Well, thank you for doing that, really. We're analog, so appreciate it.
Oh, well, I hope to get your signature then. Make sure you go to p2pkauai.org.
I will do that.
And there's a petition. There's a link to the petition right there on the top of the page. You can click on it, download it, print it, sign it, and mail it in to me, and you'll get counted.
There you go. Not a call to action, just a friendly suggestion and advice for you, the listener.
What was that one again, P2P?
P2PKauai.org. The number 2, Kauai.org. And I'm not telling you what you should do. I'm just telling you what you can do.
Oh, thank you.
And if can, if no can.
No can.
That's right. Well, hey, thanks, you guys. I really appreciate it. Have a great rest of the show.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Thanks, Jonathan.
All right. Aloha.
And I do believe we got another phone call right after that coming on up. Are you still there?
Yeah, Jimmy. Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you for joining us here on Out of the Box.
I have a real basic kind of low question.
Okay. We got some low answers.
Okay, great. How do I know if I have a smart meter?
Oh, that is a really good question. I don't think that's low at all.
Well, you know, I don't know if I need to, like, call or do anything, or I don't even know. I think I did the opt-out, but I really don't know if I have a smart meter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good question. I don't know what they look like.
I think you're going to have to go online and Google that. You could also go on Facebook and put that question on the P2P Kauai Facebook page. And someone will tell you how. I couldn't tell you exactly. I do remember that there was like three different models when the smart meter kind of controversy was happening, and they looked really similar, but they're digital, they're high tech looking, as opposed to the old style that would have that kind of circular disc that would kind of float back and forth, round and round. So I wish I had better information for you about how you could tell. But you could also call KIUC and talk to somebody there and just ask them, how would I find out if I've got a smart meter? They should know.
Yeah, that sounds easy. I want to make it easy, okay. You know, and simple. But
here's another thing. Somebody's going to come on the air, and we're gonna find out from them. So hang on, and then are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, great. You're going to tell
me okay, because I'm on a cell and it sounds a little rough.
Okay,
if you can hear me okay, that's fine.
Yeah, you sound good.
Okay. Hey, I was just going to let that caller know that she can because they will know whether they put one on or not, and she can just confirm whether it's been deferred. And I'm kind of in the thick of this now because I deferred a year ago and didn't want a smart meter, which was fine. They didn't put one on. But then recently I've become aware even of the digital meters that, you know, they would drive by and check from the street and made the choice just to get non-RF emitting good old-fashioned analog meter that wasn't going to be used later on to bounce signals or anything. So I want nothing to do with a smart meter grid.
Mm-hmm.
And so they even came out and put that on. So even if you don't have a smart meter and you want to get rid of even that digital meter, you can still have it replaced with an analog meter. And, of course, there's going to be a bunch of buzz going on because now they're wanting to charge a fee, but that has to go through PUC approval, which actually made that suggestion to KIUC, is my understanding, that PUC suggested that they come up with a fee to charge those of us
mm-hmm.
who
3,000 or so now. So I'm thinking, wow, 300, you know, $12 a month, $120 a year. Multiply that times 3,000. I want that job to check meters. $360,000, you know, for meter readers for Kauai.
Well, you forget there's a compensation package in there as well.
Well, and here's the other thing. I didn't get that $400 meter that's on a smart meter. Value of $400, so I don't have one in my house. So you can just credit my account at $400.
There you go.
So I've got a cheapio little analog meter on my house. So if you're going to charge me to check, plus I don't think this is going to work. I think they're going to end up with a class action lawsuit because basically it's calling me and the 3,000 other people, anybody else, another class of customers. So, you know, what does that mean? So if you have this kind of meter, but what about the guys who are way up at the end of Powerhouse Road? Doesn't matter how far the meter reader had to drive before to go read a meter. Everybody got treated the same.
Mm-hmm. Really, now, would you be a party to that lawsuit?
Well, absolutely.
Would you be a party to that lawsuit?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I just think what they're doing is the whole thing from the beginning was a mess. I think somebody didn't do their due diligence. All they would have had to do, you know, if I was looking at that and somebody dangled that grant carrot in front of me, because that's what it is, it's about the money, I would have said, oh, what a great idea. Let me Google, what are smart meters? What's a smart meter grid? And instead of just taking the industry's word on what it's all about and how great it was going to be, you know, they live in Kauai. They know how Kauai is. 5 minutes a year ago, when I looked at smart meters, you know, even if I didn't believe there was a health issue, even if back then I didn't think there was a privacy issue, which I clearly know there is now, that I still would have gone, wow, there's lawsuits going on all over the place. Does KIUC really want to get into that business? There are counties all over the mainland that have banned smart meters by an entire county. So for KIUC to have ignored that and just kind of plowed along and made that choice for its membership, I think was just really irresponsible because it's hugely controversial and it's not going to go away. It's like the GMO issue. It's just going to keep getting more and more unearthed about it. And I feel like, you know, I called up to get my analog meter and people are giving me misinformation. Like there's this, do what we can to get these smart meters on because we have some goal target for the grant, I think, that we have to meet. And if not, how's this going to work? I'm all for energy efficiency. I'm all for, you know, I'm not against technology, but it should be safe and it should be understood. And if the utility wants to tell me it's safe, when in the face of approaching 1,000 studies, there's a lot of questioning around it, then you better at least be willing to walk out with people who have meters that can check, gauges that can check that RF output, you know, the radiation output off them, and watch it for yourself. You know, there's this great resistance to the powers that be at KIUC for even connecting with members and going, wait, what are you talking about? Oh, you know, I'm not going to watch that documentary or whatever it is. You know, they're just like, no, we've made a decision, and there's this cognitive dissonance, you know, this connection between people who are saying, wow, what about this? What about this? And they'll just poo-poo any study that isn't an industry-based study. And whenever somebody's just calling on an industry-based study, the guys who are selling you the meter, I think that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
We get into not having intelligent choices.
I think that's what we want.
They don't sell it to you, and that's the only thing you're going to look at, and you don't go home and look up the pros and cons, you're going to get sucked in. That's not intelligent research.
But
my high horse, but that's the deal. She can go. She can go and ask KIUC, and they'll absolutely tell her what she's got on her house. And if she's concerned, she can confirm it. Here's my other beef right now. Is this whole thing, oh, by, you know, October 1st, if you haven't put in for some other, you know, getting that meter off your house, that smart meter, it's going to be $81. Never approved by the PUC. So, you know, KIUC just full-on telling its membership that it's going to do something that was never approved. You know, come October 1st, it's just silent. It wasn't like, oh, sorry about that. Just come on in and get your meter still. So now they have this proposal into the PUC for the monthly charge and a $50 something fee, one-time setup fee they're calling it now. And I'm like, oh, so 3,000 people got a meter for free. And now anybody else comes along has to pay in this membership? That's not what happened to equality. It's just... It's not going to go down easy, I can tell you that.
Yeah. Well, you raised some great points, and I think you and Jonathan Jay will have some good discussions in regards to how this develops and what we need to do next.
Right. So, you know, there's petitions going on out there, folks. Just find, you know, people that There's, you know, planetoasis.org, a Facebook page, Smart Meter Free Kauai, places you can go to kind of keep up on it.
Well, thank you.
KKPR, as always.
We'll try to get that information out. Thank you, Mahalo, for calling us. Aloha. So we're coming down to the end of our show. I was going to play a couple more testimonies, but I'm not going to go there. I know Moses is waiting for that 6 o'clock bell to ring, so we'll be coming soon. Representative Morikawa, thank you for joining us here on Out of the Box, driving all the way out from Wailua.
Waimea.
I was going to say, well, where were you swinging the clubs earlier?
Oh, no, I didn't. I canceled that because it is.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm all the way from Waimea then. I thought you were going to be on this side. So it was. I told Tim, actually, I said, I think she's golfing at Princeville. So she doesn't have too far to go. I hope she can remember how to make it. So I'm glad you made it. Any last thoughts, any words of advice and wisdom for us?
I just thank you guys for giving us the opportunity to come in and talk story.
Mm-hmm.
And well, thank you very much for having me.
Oh, yes. Well, thank you for joining us. You're always welcome, whether on phone or even Facebook, texting, however we can get the information exchange happening. It's great. It's one of the things I share with folks is that our representatives are very accessible. Our local officials do make themselves very available. I want to share with listeners, if you have concerns with the mayor's deferral request, please let him know. Please contact him or his office. Schedule some time. The opportunity is now for us to engage, just as Councilwoman Joanne Yukimura suggested. We've never been so engaged. This is a good thing for us. This is something that we need to do more of. And, you know, it is sad that people have to spend the night to ensure that they can participate in their local government and in democracy. And guess what? We'll do it again. It's an important thing for us to do, is to show up. And so I appreciate you, Representative Morikawa, for showing up. Tim, thanks for managing all the phone calls, all that good stuff. I've got one going out there, one of my wife's favorite dead artist, a hero who celebrated his birthday this week, and hopefully we'll hit the right button this time. Thanks so much, and Maria, I love you. Take care. Aloha.